Hello and welcome to a special edition of StarCast from Planet Waves. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino, and tonight's edition is for Sunday, the 10th of April, 2022. This is a special, probably extended edition offered for the purpose of doing a sign-by-sign, house-by-house breakdown of the chart for Neptune and Jupiter aligning in a conjunction, which is quite close right now, and it's exact on Tuesday, the 12th at 10:42 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And this chart calls for close examination, often it's the kind of thing that I've done in writing, but at this stage in my life and the history of the internet, it's a little easier to do it in the verbal tradition. I've included a copy of the chart anywhere that this podcast is going to appear with the possible, well, definitely with the exception of the remote location. So not every, only the ones on planetwaves.net and planetwaves.fm. And so if you are listening on one of the remote locations, Podbean or something like that, or Apple Podcasts, just click over to planetwaves.net and click on the StarCast tab on the top left of the page if you would like to look at the chart, which will help since the chart is really the thing. It's even more than a visual aid. It's the thing being read, and I'm going to describe most of the salient features. There's, of course, a lot of things to read in any chart. And before I begin doing that, one of the most important things to consider when you're reading a chart is, what is the question? Why are we seeking out the oracle? I don't consider this a casual matter. If you use astrology properly as the tool that it is, it really is a spiritual power tool. The more sincere and respectful you are, the better the results that you get. It's like any other relationship. And so I would say that we are, my intent in reading for you is to talk about the state of the world and some of the possibilities for where we're heading in this very sensitive moment, where there continue to be very urgent collective global issues and also deep personal material that is coming up, and the extent of our relationship to the wider world has hardly ever been more significant because of the way that the world managers are intruding on every aspect of our lives at this time. This is not a conspiracy theory. When world leaders manage to order half of the world's population of 4.4 billion people into their homes on suspicion of something, that is showing that those very world leaders have a lot of power, and it is a good time to inquire whether something is up. And if something was up back then, in March of 2020, when half the world was under house arrest, I mean, really, half the world under house arrest? And I'm getting that from the New York Times, by the way. I didn't make that up or read it on Donald Trump's Twitter feed. We really need to be paying attention. And so what is happening in the world now affects all of us in ways that it never has. There is an incredible reach by this telepathic direct injection to human minds called the internet, the transformation of our lives by overexposure to digital technology, and here we are. So, as I said on this week's Planet Waves FM, The astrology that we've been accustomed to is pretty harsh. We have experienced a lot of square aspects, conjunctions of planets that always tend to bring some kind of a reactionary response from world managers, and then an equally reactionary response from people whom they govern. And there is almost always a kind of a contraction or crackdown when Saturn and Pluto, for example, get together in a conjunction or opposition. And we saw this play out like clockwork during the opposition that brought us 9/11, that was exact in August of 2001, and then the conjunction of Saturn and Pluto that was exact on January 12th, 2020. So it does make sense to follow these cycles. And then lots and lots of other really harsh astrology has gone by in between then and now. And suddenly we find ourselves with a conjunction in Pisces, really one of the most mellow, easygoing, yeah, sometimes nervous, but peace-loving and pleasure-seeking and potentially spiritually oriented signs of them all. And that's a whole different scene. It's a whole different kind of astrology. What is so outstanding about this is that this is a conjunction of the classical ruler of Pisces and the modern ruler of Pisces. If you believe in modern rulerships, not all astrologers do, and for good reasons, but it's fairly plain that that Neptune has an affinity with Pisces. So whether you call it a ruler or some kind of exalted planet or just something that, you know, the god of the ocean meets up with the ocean in Pisces, and you can't say that doesn't make sense to align Neptune and Pisces. And so what we've got is this conjunction of the classical ruler Jupiter and the modern ruler Neptune. And that's not going to happen again. I don't know when it happened last, but it's not going to happen again in Pisces until 2188. So it's about the same distance forward as it will be backward to that. Jupiter will make a conjunction to Neptune once every time it goes through a sign. And so that's about a 13-year cycle. I'm sure there's going to be some where it happens twice. So not in the case of Pisces. 2188 will have Jupiter conjunct Neptune in the very last degree of Pisces. It almost skips Pisces the next time around, but it does happen, and it does happen in the very last degree. So what we've got here is rare, and it is special. And in my approach to astrology, the more unusual something is, the more attention should be paid to it. Now, that's not to say the things that aren't quite typical, like Mercury retrograde, for example, don't have incredibly powerful results at different times. As we saw, for example, the Mercury retrograde that went from late February 2020 to early March 2020 was one of the most stunning astrological events I've ever seen. There was a total transformation of the world in 3 weeks, given, okay, under the influence of much other astrology, but still, that was quite a scene. And I gather that most astrologers missed it because their eyes were on the Saturn-Pluto conjunction. Their eyes were on the Pluto-Eris square that stretched out for the next 2 years. And, you know, what's a little Mercury retrograde between friends? But actually, that Mercury retrograde provided the perfect ground cover to do this kind of, zero to warp factor 50 type of thing where they went from, and I promise I'll stop talking about this after I say this thing, a suspected virus on January 11, 2020, a new claimed disease on February 11, 2020, a global pandemic on March 11, 2020, and then the half of the world under house arrest 3 weeks later. I mean, that's incredible. Whatever you think about it, whether you think it was a complete act of genius and Fauci should win the Nobel Prize, or whether you think it was the most outrageous and corrupt thing to ever happen, it is still very impressive. And we who study astrology are wise to make the analogies between what is happening in the world and what is happening in the planets. That is why we study mundane astrology. Now, the question of this chart is basically, let's just say, what is the state of the world and what is the potential that this chart might be demonstrating? What guidance can it give us about how to navigate through the challenges at this time in our lives? And what warnings is it giving us about potential problems and pitfalls that may arise? So I'm using a chart for Kingston. Reading event astrology for an event without a central place is tricky, but the default position is to for the astrologer to read for their location, because what other thing is logical? I'm not sure about this thing of reading for the nation's capital. What if you're in Australia? What if you're in England? Why should it matter what's going on when the chart is cast for Washington, D.C.? But at least with a chart cast for the place that the astrologer interpreting the chart is sitting, we have a line of reasoning that can justify reading the chart. And it works beautifully in horary astrology, which is always cast for the location of the astrologer. So I call this the horary rule. You cast the chart when there's not a place specifically. You cast the chart for where the astrologer is at the moment that the event occurs. Okay, so this yields a chart with Cancer in the ascendant, 9 degrees and 3 minutes. It is a chart with the moon in the first degree of Virgo. That would be true anywhere. And by the way, the only thing that moves when the chart moves are the mundane angles. The ascendant, descendant, that is to say the horizon, and then the MCIC, or the 10th house, 4th house axis. Those are the only things that that change. So therefore, the positions of the planets by house change when you make large geographical moves, but the positions of the planets by sign are the same anywhere the chart is cast for. Okay, so this gives us a chart with Cancer rising. That's interesting because in this thing called the Thema Mundi, which doesn't get enough discussion and is something still of a veiled esoteric device, even among the conservative fundamentalist Christian astrologers of the medieval astrology and Hellenistic astrology movement, I hardly hear bupkis about the Thema Mundi. Even when I was closer to the astrology movement, I didn't really hear very much about it. The Thema Mundi is one of the oldest known documents in astrology. It is a teaching tool. It's a tool that demonstrates planetary rulerships. Thema Mundi means the chart of the world, but the scholars of that chart, the ancient astrology specialists, agree that this is merely a teaching device. It is not an actual chart for the world, and there have been many attempts made to recreate the chart using computer software, a chart that has Cancer rising and the moon in the first house, and then Leo on the second with the sun in Leo, and Virgo on the third with Mercury in Virgo, and Libra on the fourth with Venus in Libra, that kind of thing. So far in the reach of computers, which is considerable, they can't recreate that chart. So it is a hypothetical chart, but it has Cancer rising. So the old people in togas, particularly Eudoxus of Cnidos, who's credited with the development of this chart, an old philosopher astrologer who went by the code name Hermes Trismegistus, how about that, approximately 400 BC, leaves us this chart, and it has Cancer rising. So, for what it's worth, Cancer rising in this chart. And then this puts, by whole sign houses, Aries in the 10th, as it would be in the Thema Mundi. And then we have a natural mundane 10th house, 10th house cusp, the actual 10th house cusp, using Koch houses, with a whole bunch of Pisces in it. And so that Pisces conjunction of Jupiter conjunct Neptune is very high up in this chart. It is just tucked into the 10th house, and then there are several more planets in Pisces One of them is Nessus, the third of the Centaur planets. And then something that is interesting and somewhat touching, which is that Venus is in Pisces for the festivities. We want to leave her out. Venus is the planet exalted in Pisces. So there's several types of rulership in astrology. One is classical rulership, which is the rulerships that are used all the way back to basically the turn of the beginning of the first millennium AD, right? Like the year 50. So Jupiter and all those planets were known from the very, very, very beginnings of astrology. So the classical ruler right up on top, the modern ruler right up on top, and then Venus is a second type of classical ruler called the exalted planet. Every sign, pretty much, not every sign, but most of the signs have a planet that is exalted in that sign. Pisces is one of them, and it is Venus. So Venus is unofficially, it's not unofficial. It's right there in the table of essential dignities, the planet exalted in Pisces. And so therefore, it's quite exciting that the classical ruler, the modern ruler, and then the exalted planet are all in Pisces all together. Now, Nessus is there as well. Nessus is the third centaur, discovered in 1993, and I was studying Nessus from before it was named. I picked up on Nessus in 1998 when I met Robert von Heeren, who co-wrote the first book about Pholus, the second centaur discovered in 92. And then I also met Melanie Reinhardt. She was working on pretty much the original book in English about the first three centaurs. And from the beginning, Nessus, which is a Neptune crosser, by the way, centaurs always cross orbits, and Nessus is a Neptune crosser, so it goes way, way out to the edge of the solar system, the officially sanctioned solar system, where the planets ridiculously end at Neptune. And so it has many properties of a Neptune-like centaur. In addition to the fact that it crosses it, the myth is very Neptunian. What's true here? What's, this seems a little bit vague in this sense. There's deception involved, and it's just very Piscean, and it's karmic like Pisces. And Nessus is the centaur planet associated with consequences, and it's also associated with who takes responsibility for those consequences. One of my favorite astrologers in the entire world, Melanie Reinhardt's key phrase for Nessus is, "The buck stops here." She gets that from the desk plate of President Harry Truman. Debatable whether the buck really did stop with him. But the buck stops here means who is going to deal? Who is going to deal the cards? That's the reference, not to dollars, but to dealing the cards. And so we've got this invisible influence. Most astrologers don't read Nessus. They're not interested. They don't know what to do with the planet that is that poorly defined, that they don't have direct experience with. They haven't necessarily seen it in 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 charts, as I have. So what do you say about this thing? Well, it's lurking around in Pisces, and it's a reminder to pay attention for the theme of consequences, the theme of responsibility, and to notice something when there is an attribution of blame of some kind, an assignment of responsibility. Now, let's go to the big planets and just consider for a second what it means to have the two rulers of Pisces in a conjunction in Pisces. That's a lot of Pisces. And what it is suggesting and calling attention to is that Neptune has been in Pisces for a long time. That goes back to 2011, so it's been there for 11 years, and it's going to be there for a while longer. It's still got 7 degrees to go before it begins to leave Pisces. That's not going to be for a while. And my contention is that many things that are happening in the world are attributable to Neptune in Pisces, but we don't talk about that because it's not big on the fireworks the way that we think of Neptune. It tends to be about things that disappear, hidden influences, hidden toxins, and a general state of so much Pisces that we really bring out the delusion, deception, denial angle of Pisces and of Neptune. And this is an important thing to know about Neptune, because while it's one of the most sublime planets and the inspiration of artists and musicians and shapeable and sculptable into all kinds of beautiful colors and sounds and ideas, it's also very easily corruptible. It's corruptible by habitual lying. It's corruptible by the overuse of mind-altering substances. Corruptible by, let's see, not wanting to deal with the world, right? Neptune is a lot about whether or not you want to deal with the world, and it's also a measure of sanity. Debbie Kempton Smith, one of the great astrologers of the 20th century, and her book is worth reading and reading carefully. It's called Secrets from a Stargazer's Notebook. And it is probably the single most practical astrology book ever written. It's also by far the funniest. And it's so funny you memorize it as you go, because you want to save these jokes for parties, at least back in the days where there were parties and people talked about astrology at them. So we wonder if either of those are happening at the moment. And she says that if you want to tell if someone's a nutcase, study their Neptune. She says the most convincing evidence of someone being crazy is that their Neptune is banged up. Now, this Neptune is not particularly banged up. In fact, it's pretty harmonious. It's in a conjunction with the greater benefic, and it's about to take a conjunction from the so-called lesser benefic Venus. But still, there is an excess of this energy that can be either sublime and harmonious and creative and beautiful and inspiring, or it can be drink, drug, delusion, denial, deception, etc., etc., etc. And so we really have to decide which way we want to go with this. And the biggest challenge with Neptune is how slippery it is, how easy it is to not notice what is actually going on with Neptune, how easy it is for this influence to simply disappear. And Jupiter is, I think, in a sense, remedying that situation. Jupiter is for a gas giant, it is a very large, very dense planet. By the way, denser than Saturn. Saturn is supposed to be the planet of structure and form and of solid things and all that stuff. Well, it turns out that Jupiter is actually physically a denser big bubble of gas and stuff. And so my reading is that it is going to place a kind of a lens in front of Neptune that is going to allow us to see things a little more clearly for what they are, or may place us in a position to just ramp up the denial big time. One of the interesting phenomena of Jupiter approaching Nessus in Pisces was that as Jupiter made this approach, which was going on all in the beginning part of 2022, and I think the conjunction was sometime in it was the weekend, I think, of maybe March 7th or something, or March 5th, way back in the first week of March. I talked the blue streak about that. Was that there was this seemingly rising tide of awareness of what was actually going on in the world, and how weird it was, and how inappropriate it was. Certain things were happening certain ways. And my concern was that we would get this awakening and this willingness to see things for what they were, and then that conjunction would fade as it has faded. It would begin to separate. Now it's 8 degrees separate. And then as Jupiter approached Neptune, it would be very easy for people to go back to sleep and hang out in La La Land and play the game of blame and denial and various forms of polarization, which brings me to the topic of the astral plane. So there are some maps, and I've got one that I've written. I would rewrite it, but if I can resurrect it, I will. I'll try to connect it to this. I know that I've entered it various places in the Planet Waves let's say knowledge base here and there. I used to circulate it among my writers by email. I actually pulled this thing together for a writer I used to work for, named Amanda Painter. And an aspect like Jupiter conjunct Neptune is one that's very, all are, but this is very susceptible to what level are we taking this on? What is the, what are the properties of thought and consciousness that are being brought to the table? And then how do they make that aspect seem in some way different? So, for example, if you take this aspect on the astral plane, you're going to get this extreme polarization like we have right now. And look, the world was polarized at the time of my birth. I mean, John F. Kennedy was elected president in 1960, and he wins by 500,000 votes, all right? 500,000 votes in the United States of America. That is ridiculous. So it was almost a statistical tie. However, when President Kennedy was killed, everyone, probably except the people who killed him, grieved that. We were polarized, except when we weren't. The world stopped. Everyone reflected. We respected the fact that a leader was lost, even in a world that was polarized and was divided. Now, if something happened to the United States president, there would probably be half the world dancing in the streets and half the world thinking, oh, this is very sad, or maybe it would be divided in thirds. And so when you have that kind of polarization, extreme polarization like we have now, particularly under digital influences, where everything is polarized, where morality is based on a series of logical statements that a pocket calculator could come out with and decide someone is worthy of being boiled in oil because they said one thing on Twitter, that is a polarized world. And where the world is polarized and where people are all uppity and self-righteous about the polarization, you know you're on the astral plane. That's one of the ways you know. The attributes of the astral plane are here it's Summerland, here it's Nightmare Alley. And when you have that division, that's how you know you're on the astral plane. And the planes shift and shift and shift as you move, let's say, at the risk of using a vertical model, upward, and then end up on the soul plane where there really is no division, there is no separation, there is a kind of unified state of consciousness. One plane below that, the etheric plane, is where it is possible to think that you have all the answers, that you are the great guru, the great teacher, infallible, worthy of 64 Rolls Royces, blah, blah, blah. And then almost all the time when a teacher or a guru or whoever slips, it's because they slipped on the etheric material of the level right below the soul plane. And then onward through them. So I think that we've got a lot of astral going on right now. Moving through there, the astral stuff becomes righteous in terms of this. My position is right. My country is right. My this is right. My thing is right. Your thing is wrong. You deserve to be boiled in oil, fed to the lions like early Christians. That righteousness is a slight morph or twist of on the astral plane, and then so forth, and you move your way through it. And by the way, to all the people who are hoping and praying for 5D to take over, that ain't so great either. 5D has quite a lot of bullshit flying, and is not anything to aspire to. Perhaps it is better than the astral plane, where everything just seems completely polarized and is jammed up like an airport with too damn many airplanes flying around in it. However, let's aim high. Let's aim for a true level of self-realization and of understanding. Okay, so I've gone on for a while. I'm going to keep going. If you're still listening, I'll keep talking. So let's go back one sign to Aquarius. There has been a heck of a lot of activity in Aquarius recently. There was a big pileup of planets around Saturn lately. First it was Venus, then it was Mars, then it was Juno. Now Vesta is approaching. And my take on and what's going on in Aquarius really can be described mostly by the presence of Mars and of Saturn in Aquarius. To me, this is the extreme tension, another form of astral polarity that has been induced of turning individuals against the collective and the collective against individuals. This false community-mindedness that says that we love everyone, peace and love, and kumbaya, but if you didn't agree with us, we're going to feed you to lions or boil you in oil, and you're going to be happy about it because you deserve it and it's your karma. That's the bullshit astral level of Saturn and Mars in Aquarius. A false dichotomy between the individual and the collective. If you don't do what I say, you're a mass murderer, blah, blah, blah. We've heard a lot of this lately. You don't wear a mask, you want to kill grandma. Really? Really? How would that stand up at trial before a jury of one's peers? It wouldn't. People are not that stupid. So, this is an astral false dichotomy. What we need to do to get beyond that is to recognize that we are individuals and we are among a lot of other people. Can't do anything about that. You can't really get away from all these people. You can't really get away from the structures of society. At a certain point, you have to spend $4 to buy your bottle of gallon of milk. You can't stay apart forever. And so the individual and the collective are basically stuck. And it's a question of what's the social theory? What's the spiritual theory? What's the political theory that is going to account for both individuals and some necessary group accountability and responsibility, individual accountability and responsibility? Actually, when things are going well, there's absolutely no conflict between the two. We just need some tolerance that if I can say what I want on my podcast, you can say what you want on your podcast, and, you know, tough noogies for anyone who doesn't like that. But plenty of people don't like that. Plenty of people think, I should be able to say what I want on my cast, my podcast, and if you say what I don't like on your podcast, you should be boiled in oil or fed to the lions, or maybe boiled in oil and then fed to the lions who prefer to have their meat raw. But that's pretty much what it sounds like on Twitter, on Facebook, on email groups at this time. If you don't believe what I believe, you should be chopped to bits. Come on. Come on. Can we do better than this? We need examples. It happens, good examples, positive examples. It happens that Mars is either in the position, in the degree of the chrysalis or the exemplar. Hold on, let me pause and get that book. And what book, you ask? The book is An Astrological Mandala by Dane Rudyar, published in something like 1968, 1969. So while we're going to do the one-hour version of StarCast, Vintage Books Edition, May 74, copyright 73 by Rudyar. 73. Comes out in 73. Library of Congress number, is it 1973? I thought it was in the 60s. Okay, 1973. That's fine. All right. No objection to this coming out in 1973, as if it matters. All right. Aquarius. So this is the system where every degree of the zodiac gets a little picture associated with it, a description of some kind of a scene from worldly life. And Mars is in degree 29, 28 degrees and 6 minutes means it's in the 29th degree. And the symbol is a butterfly emerging from a chrysalis. The capacity to utterly transform the character of one's consciousness by radically altering the structural patterns of everyday living and the types of relationships one enters upon. So it is about the individual, right? It's about a butterfly emerging from a chrysalis, right? It's a specific being in transformation. And it's the capacity of to utterly transform the character of one's own consciousness by making decisions. Very Martian, very Aquarius, the perfect combination. And so that's where Mars happens to be right now. And I think Mars is a very important planet because, boy, if we have Neptune issues, which we do, we really have Mars issues because most people need like a 4-year course in either in anger management or in doing something creative with their energy. I think most of the trouble in the world comes from people not having involvement in things like cameras or guitars or movie cameras or dance class or drum class or something that is creative and wholly human. And then all of that energy then is just siphoned into conflict. So you've got to use your Mars in some constructive and creative way. Otherwise, it ends up getting used to start fights, basically. And we see plenty of that going on increasingly as digital technology completely transforms people into these robotic entities communicating through a robotic medium. There's very little room left for sensitivity. And so I think that one of the things Mars in this position is saying is hang out in the physical world. And when you're in the digital world, please treat people more like you would treat them if you were in the physical world. In the physical world, if you had a disagreement with somebody on the street and punched them in the face, you would get arrested. Unless you're whoever that dude was at the Oscars. And I really don't understand why the LAPD didn't put him in handcuffs for assault. But there's the thing. He was cheered. He was cheered when he won his Oscar. Come on, man. That's okay? I don't think it's okay. That's my opinion. Today, I'm your minister. I think it sucks. But what it demonstrates is the extent to which people think it's okay to act like you're on Twitter in the physical world and everyone's wearing tuxedos. But I assure you, if you are not a multi-bazillionaire and you didn't like something someone said in the supermarket and you punched them in the face, you would be in handcuffs. Why is it acceptable in the digital world? Why is it acceptable in this so-called, I think a kind of a synthetic astral plane that the internet is about? So lots of themes there on transhumanism. If you're curious about this, write to me at EFC@planetwaves.net, EFC, that's easy to remember, @planetwaves.net, that's easy to remember too. And I'll send you a book chapter, title your subject header, book chapter. Okay, next department. We're going to keep going backwards, then we're going to jump to Aries and Taurus and almost call it a night. Okay, so what's going on in Capricorn? Well, if you recall, earlier in the year, there was a huge pileup in Capricorn. That actually began in December with the double conjunction of Venus to Pluto in Capricorn. Capricorn, in the last full year, the last full year, note that, less now, we have more like, 50 weeks left till Pluto makes its way into Aquarius for its first of several transitional entries into Aquarius, and we begin a whole new era that's going to last till 2044 of Pluto and Aquarius. Pluto is also at the Pluto return of the United States of America with the Declaration of Independence and the liberationist view of the founders of the American experiment is something that became a global experiment. So for all of you who don't like that certain astrologers talk too much about the United States, well, let me tell you something. The United States serves as the exemplary philosophy of the world, particularly in the ideals stated in the founding documents, i.e. the pursuit of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The proposition that all people are created equal. The Ten Commandments of the Bill of Rights, the freedoms of speech and assembly and religion, the freedom to defend yourself if you need to, the freedom to not testify against yourself. All of these things became exemplary philosophies of the last 2.5 centuries. Emulated by people around the world, aspired to. Okay, the United States is a big capitalist mess, but still, people respect the fact that the American concept is an aspiration to freedom. Well, Pluto's back in the position that it was in at the time of the signing of the Declaration of Independence and the commencement of the Revolutionary War. We are in revolutionary times. In fact, we have lived through a revolution. Is anyone noticing? That was not a pandemic. That was a revolution by globalists. At the end of this, we don't have more healthy people or less sick people or anything, less risk of a pandemic happening again. We ain't got shit except a globalist revolution. I just got a thing floating in from the New York Times, a newspaper I can barely stand to read, that said, this headline said something like, they just keep being more billionaires every day. How is this possible? Well, I'll tell you how it's possible. There's been a globalist billionaire revolution. And you too can join the club if you're willing to lie, cheat, steal, and use science as a weapon. So what exactly is this United States Polluter Return? By the way, I've written tons about this. If you just Google my name and United States Polluter Return, I have written a freaking blue streak about this for the last 3 to 4 years. So remember, this is happening, and it is part of whatever else is happening. It is all the way spread around the background of this scenario that we're living through, which is that we are in the Pluto return of the concept of a free society that's not supposed to be ruled by kings and princes, but rather ruled by democratic means. Okay, enough Capricorn, Pisces, and Aquarius. Let's check in with Aries. This is really exciting, I think, and it's interesting and a little perverse. Okay, so we know that Chiron is in Aries. I've written a blue streak about that. That I'm describing, and if you have a better way to describe it, please send it my way, as a process of self-actualization, of actually becoming oneself, of the tropism in the psyche to evolve and grow and become that's as natural and intrinsic as a plant reaching for light and water. One of the early users, or maybe the person who coined the term, I forget who, was back in the 40s or 50s, described it as the process in therapy, the instinctual drive in a person that makes therapy work when it works. Now, this is before they were shooting up everybody with lithium and Valium and tricyclics and SSRIs and all this stuff. There was a thing called therapy. It didn't happen by SMS message. It happened with people sitting in a consulting room and learning how to be honest. But the thing that was inspiring people to be honest, to be real, to shed their own bullshit, borrowing from Dr. Amp to dig their way out of the shit, is a self-actualization drive, and it's illustrated beautifully by Chiron in Aries. The shadow side of that is, I'm in my tribe, you're in my tribe. If your tribe tweets something that I don't like, we're going to boil you in oil. That's not self-actualization. That is bullshit, digitally driven tribalization. Okay, now, the position of the sun. The sun at 22 and change, Aries is conjunct Pallas Athene exactly to the degree. That's an interesting degree. My Jupiter is right there. Let's see what happens when we go to that Sabian symbol. I used to know these all by heart, and tonight I'm looking them up. So that's 23 Aries. A pregnant woman in a light summer dress. Okay, let's see what Professor Rudyard, who, by the way, was a composer and philosopher, as well as an astrologer. Abundance made possible, no, excuse me, a pregnant woman in a light summer dress, fecundity, masculine aggressiveness, and the woman's desire for fulfillment, the previous degrees, are integrated and realized in the expected child. This threefold sequence can be seen operating at several levels. The third term, the child, can take various emotional and cultural forms. The basic meaning remains the same. Summer is a period of fruition. Humanity at the receptive woman level reaps the fruits of this dynamic activity. So it's about new things, new experiences, new feelings coming into reality. Not literally pregnancy, but this is a symbol book of pictures. And she's in a light summer dress. It's very easy going scene, and it's about abundance. Here's the catch. Conjunct Pallas Athene. Pallas Athene is asexual. It's not. Pallas is born from her daddy's head in full armor. Ain't no pussy involved in the birth of Pallas Athene. Her father, Zeus's head, splits open, and a woman emerges in full armor, ready for warfare. Now it's an Aries. Ain't that exciting? The other thing about given the head splitting open and the Athene being the product of the thought form of her father, his head, is that this asteroid is about daddy pleasing. It's also about law, politics, and strategy. Conjunct the sun, I would emphasize the daddy pleasing theme. We've certainly seen a lot of that lately. By the way, just as a joke, I have devotional Tony Fauci candles on the altar in the Planet Waves office, which occasionally we light and take photos of. And so we live in this era where we think that we will be fine if we propitiate authority and come crawling on our bellies and say, we submit, we submit. That's the kind of very sick daddy-pleasing that we are seeing. The opposite of that would be some form of a legal or moral strategy to get ourselves to a better place. On the high side, Pallas Athene calls for intelligence. Athene is very smart. She's the goddess of wisdom. She's also extremely protective. So, and by the way, I've been to her temple called the Erechtheum on the Acropolis of Athens, and she came to meet me personally. So I'm speaking from some personal whispering of the goddess Athene in my ear. I will leave out what happened in that conversation, but I'll tell you that I was all alone on the Acropolis, with the exception of one guard and one tourist who was briefly there and took my picture on the steps of the Parthenon. The Erechtheum is off to the side, and so I basically had the entire Acropolis of Athens to myself. And it was in that moment that Athene came to me with her message. Okay, now, here's the perverse part. We've got this daddy-pleasing law, strategy, organization, very Saturnian asteroid, Pallas Athene, and then the sun's about to be conjunct Eris in Aries. You could not have two more wildly diverging energies than the daddy-pleasing structure, law, conventional wisdom, strategy, follow the rules of Pallas Athene versus the subversive, I'm going to destroy everything quality of Eris. The upend the patriarchy, upend the matriarchy, fuck you all attitude of Eris. And so very soon after, with this aspect, Jupiter conjunct Neptune, let's not forget that's what we're talking about. While this aspect is still within 1 degree of exact orb, the sun conjoins Eris. That ought to be interesting. So there is the kissing the ass of authority part is very quickly giving way to this anarchistic upend the power structure quality of the sun conjunct Eris. Okay, a couple of more. My favorite thing about this chart, personally, a few other favorite things about it, but one of my favorite things about it, and one of the things that I think maybe other astrologers, except for Melanie Reinhardt, are least likely to notice is Mercury is in the discovery degree of Chiron. So Chiron was discovered November 1st, 1977, Pasadena, California, 11 o'clock in the morning, and Chiron was at about 3 degrees and 8 minutes. somewhere right around there. I don't have that chart handy, but it was in the fourth degree. It's the rainbow bridge between the inner and outer planets, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, that was used as the title of Barbara Hand-Clow's book. So, of course, she has definitely seen this. Because once you're hip to the discovery degree of Chiron, it's kind of like the Aries point or any other of these very sensitive degrees. And for people who study Chiron, the discovery degree of Chiron is a very sensitive degree. And Mercury is there in Taurus. So what do we get with a symbolic conjunction of Mercury and Chiron in Taurus? Well, how about the wisdom of the body? How about paying attention to what the body is saying about its needs, its pain, and its desire for healing? Also, a channeling of a healing message through the mental, cognitive, sentient consciousness of Mercury. And then something always worth checking for when you have Mercury and Chiron in an aspect together, which is it tends to create in certain people, in enough people that it's worth checking in every single chart, a kind of a diminuization, was that a word, of one's own intelligence. People with Mercury Chiron contacts can think that they're stupid. They can assess themselves as less intelligent than they are. Now, I happen to have a Mercury Chiron conjunction. It's wide and it's loose, but I depend upon it. And what's interesting is one of my, let's say, superpowers as an investigative reporter is never assuming that I know, and also allowing myself to be a little bit dumb. I'm never afraid to seem stupid, particularly to a source in an article. Government or corporate official, big hot activist, lawyer, whatever. I don't care if they think I'm stupid. In fact, it helps me if they think I'm stupid. I'll just keep asking questions till I understand. And so the nature of Mercury Chiron includes, and this is documented in the literature elsewhere, that just happens to be my manifestation of it, right? Because I like to put all aspects to work, is know when you don't know. Don't be afraid to ask stupid questions. There are no stupid questions except asking a cop if it's okay to have a kilo of cocaine in the trunk of your car. Besides that, every question's an intelligent question, particularly if you really want to know something. So Mercury Chiron is saying, use your curiosity. Be guided by a kind of a physicality around your curiosity. Look for tangible evidence of things, not just conceptual evidence and things people have written, but what do your senses say to you? Mercury, I think, is best described in the Bhagavad Gita, the mind of the senses, the consciousness of creatures. So that's what Lord Krishna says. That's basically what I am. He's saying, I am this gift of sentience, the mind of the senses, and the consciousness of creatures, including your goldfish and your kitty cat, and Lord Krishna. He loves us all. Okay, so that's there. Check that out. Contemplate 1977 if you're a Chiron freak. Okay, let's see, what else have we got? While we're on this chart, one of the really wild things about it is that Saturn is square the lunar nodes. I don't know where we're going to, if you hear anyone write about this, I can't stand reading things astrologers say. So if you happen to notice somebody writing about this, I'm very curious to hear what they have to say about Saturn square the lunar nodes. When a planet is square the lunar nodes, it's as if it's sitting on the lunar nodes, and nothing can pass from the north to the south node or the south to the north node without going through the planet that is square of the nodes. Mars was there recently, but pretty much in terms of what's really tuned into those nodes, it is Saturn square the nodes right now. And the north node is in Taurus, the south node is in Scorpio. There's a lot about power with the lunar nodes in Taurus and Scorpio. There's almost an obsession with power with the lunar nodes in Taurus and Scorpio. And Saturn is saying, have discipline, pay attention, consider the needs of the many, consider the needs of the few, consider all things Aquarian. And stop before you think that something is just all about power. I can do this. I can get over on this person. I can make a lot of money. Screw everyone else. Well, that might work now, but then what? And with Saturn, which is one of the cosmic brake pedals and boundaries when necessary, particularly in Aquarius, saying, think this through. What is the relationship of the one and the many? Have you considered it? Have you thought about it? And it's worth bringing into specific individual situations. One last point. The moon is in the first degree of Virgo at the time of this aspect. It almost was 15 minutes, excuse me, about half an hour. Moon takes 2 hours to go through 1 degree. It's at 18 arc minutes. That's approximately 35 minutes. And this is remember, it's an aspect that's not going to happen again till 2188. So 35 minutes is statistically insignificant. Therefore, it's a kind of a miracle that Moon is in the first degree of Virgo. Well, that's an invitation to healing. It's about paying attention to service. It's about there's an ethical call to action with the Moon in Virgo. There is a service, ethical, a teaching call to action. There is a pay attention to food. Take care of your food. Virgo is the place where food is stored, according to William Lilly in the book Christian Astrology, published in 1645, approximately 1645. There it is. So the moon is going to oppose. Once this aspect happens, then the next thing that happens for the next few days is the moon makes oppositions first to Venus, then to Nessus, then to Jupiter. Well, then to Neptune, then to Jupiter, then to some other stuff orbiting around in late Pisces, a couple of other all very Neptune-like spiritually oriented minor planets, Borsisi and a couple of others. This is a busy moon. So the moon in the beginning of a sign means a new story has begun, a new chapter, well, more like a new chapter in the story. And my take on the Virgo moon, and it was just 1 month ago that I wrote an article about the Virgo moon saying, do we remember the holistic principle? Why suddenly are we all worshiping at the altar of Western medicine? Why exactly was a health food store one of two places to place human beings under arrest in the state of New York for not wearing a mask when they had a medical exemption, a legitimate, and there is no such thing as an illegitimate medical exemption in the executive order, in effect at that time, but in a health food store? Two elderly people with respiratory distress who should not have been wearing masks were placed under arrest by a man named Chris Snyder, the owner of Mother Earth's Marketplace? Give me a fucking break. Why is it that everyone's been going to that store and doubling their grocery bills to have all this healthy food and kimchi and organic this, that, and the other thing? And then they're enforcing the obstruction of the airway on threat of arrest by armed police officers? Huh? I mean, this is really an intelligence test. And it's also a sensitivity test, a test of one's humanity. If you think, throw them to the lions, boil them in oil, tar and feathers, they're just old fucks anyway, so what? She's got lung cancer. Well, how about let's take that the other way? What about the holistic principle? What about we take care of everything? You take care of your body, you take care of your environment, you take care of the people around you, and that is what helps propagate well-being. Instead, everyone's lining up to have their baby injected with deadly poison, with blood thinner in it. Please, let's come to our senses. That's about all I have to say. Is that enough? 59 minutes. Short enough to be on Pacifica Radio. I will say thank you, and except for all the cussing and swearing, which makes it what's called not FCC ready. There's another presentation about this aspect where I talk about other things, and I'm more circumspect and even more philosophical than I have been in here, and make fewer references to the chart. That's in the new Planet Waves FM, and that's available on planetwaves.fm or on planetwaves.net on the Planet Waves FM tab. Easy to find if you still remember how to use the website. All right. Thank you. This has been great fun. We are a subscriber and customer-supported project. If you notice, there's no ads, there's no pop-ups, there's no Google AdWords, there's no Google AdSense, there's no third parties who are trying to exploit your mind and your time and your money. We're totally a self-supported operation. All we offer are my readings, my articles, and my horoscopes. It takes a lot of people to put this website together. We work hard all the time for sweatshop wages. Please take advantage. If you've listened all the way through this and you like the kinds of things that I say in my somewhat out there approach to astrology, you can have lots more of it. There's even a class called The Philosophy of Astrology, which is under the Learn Astrology tab on the planetwaves.net website. Well worth it. If you're someone who's pressed for money, I know how hard it is right now, just send us a request to cs@planetwaves.net and we'll send you a discount coupon. We like to hear from you, our customers, our readers, our listeners, and we always respond. And if we don't, it was just a momentary lapse of attention. Send the email again. We will get it. All right. Don't forget to check in on the homepage of planetwaves.net. There's more coverage and again, more on Planet Waves FM. Thanks for listening. Stay in touch and bye for now.